From the American College of Cardiology, this is Dr. Kim Eagle, ACC.org, Editor-in-Chief, with this week's Eagle's Eye View. This is your weekly cardiovascular update from ACC.org. This week, I've picked two articles that are being published in JACC that I thought would be interesting to our learning audience. One of them looks at trends in long-term mortality after congenital heart surgery in the United States. And the other one looks at the relationship between pregnancy outcomes in women with heart disease, the CARPREG-2 study. Let's start with the paper looking at long-term mortality after congenital heart surgery. As you know, many of the studies that have looked at long-term outcomes after congenital heart surgery have been in countries that have a unified national database. But this is an article which actually uses a U.S. registry to ascertain long-term risk. So the study question was, what is the long-term survival for patients 21 years of age or less who have undergone surgery for congenital heart defects? It was a retrospective cohort study, but with prospectively collected data. And it uses data from the Pediatric Cardiac Care Consortium, which was linked to our National Death Index for long-term mortality data. Survival was compared to that of the general population using something called a standardized mortality ratio, which assessed survival over the entire length of the study period. Results, this is a large study, about 36,000 patients who survived their first congenital heart surgery and could be linked to identifiers through the National Death Index up to 2014. Median follow-up was about 18 years, and there was an overall mortality of 8.3% or 3,191 deaths. The 15-year standardized mortality ratio was highest, of course, in the early surgical era, like 1982 to 1992, at 12.7%, and lowest in the most recent surgical era, 1998 to 2008, where it dropped to 10%. What was interesting here is that the standardized mortality ratio was elevated even for conditions that you and I would consider to be mild congenital defects. For instance, the standardized mortality ratio was 3.4 for patients with patent ductus arteriosus and 3.1 for atrial septal defect over the course of the study. So the authors concluded that long-term mortality for these patients was elevated across all forms of congenital heart disease compared to the general population. No doubt, survival has improved in the most recent era, particularly around the more complex lesions, but it continues to lag behind the general population. This was a nice study in terms of using the Pediatric Care Consortium, which is thought to capture 10 to 30% of infant operations in this country. It was interesting that was an increased mortality risk even in patients with mild disease, and clearly the study suggests that there is improvement. One of the questions I had as I reflected on this study is the transition of patients from the pediatric cardiologist to adult cardiovascular care, and whether some of the continued mortality trends for even mild disease relate to our failure as a system to adequately manage this transition effectively. I thought it was an interesting study. It's an important one and should keep us focused on trying to improve the transition of care and continuity of care for all types of young people who go through congenital heart surgery. The second article looks at pregnancy outcomes in women with heart disease, the CARPREG-2 study. The study question, and this again is published in JACC this week, how can the prediction of cardiac complications among pregnant women with heart disease be improved? This study utilized two well-established Canadian Centers of Excellence for Maternal Cardiac Disease. They collected data on pregnancies prospectively and followed the patients out to 6 months. They looked at adverse events and temporal trends, and they used both univariate and multivariate analysis to assess for risk. And they created a new risk index called the CARPREG-2 risk index for women with heart disease going through pregnancy. Results, nearly 2,000 pregnancies and cardiac complications occurred in 16%, primarily heart failure and arrhythmias. The investigators found that the rate of pulmonary edema decreased over time, and there were 10 predictors of complications that were identified, and these were assigned a weighted point score to create the new CARPREG 2 risk index. 3 points were assigned for prior cardiac events or arrhythmias, baseline New York Heart functional class 3 or 4, or cyanosis, mechanical valve, 2 points for systemic ventricular dysfunction, high-risk valve disease, or LV outflow tract obstruction, high-risk aortopathy, pulmonary hypertension, and coronary disease, and 1 point for no prior cardiac intervention but presenting late for assessment. The new CARPREG 2 risk index then had 5 categories based on the sum of points. So 0 to 1 point, 5%, 2 points, 10% risk, 3 points, 15% risk, 4 points, 22%, and more than 4 points, a whopping 41% risk. The C statistic for this index was 0.78, which was significantly better than the original CARPREG, Zahara, and WHO methods of risk prediction. The conclusions of the investigators, first of all, this is an excellent risk index to be used for assessing risk in a woman who wants to understand her chances of a cardiac complication. The study is very helpful in identifying both the types of risk factors and their relative importance in predicting a woman's risk. And compared to the original study, the CARPREG 1 risk score published in 2001, this is a more recent study where maternal cardiac care has been transformed and is much more lesion specific. A couple of thoughts that also were raised by this paper. Number one, what's the generalizability? This was published based on data from 2 highly specialized centers in Canada. So its generalizability to the general population in other hospitals has to be validated. This study also, I think, highlighted the fact that cardiac complications in pregnancy can occur up to 3 months postpartum. And this is ironic because, at least in the United States, many women lose their medical insurance after just 6 weeks postpartum. This study, thirdly, showed that women who presented late in pregnancy for assessment that's more than 20 weeks gestation had an increased risk of complications, suggesting that perhaps they had issues that could have been managed earlier, such as hypertension, for example, and delays in referral and access to the specialized care should be addressed. I guess a fourth comment was that even in the lowest risk group, 5% of them had complications. And this surely calls to mind the need for us to develop more specialized centers to help these women. And I guess the last thing is many women with high-risk cardiac disease might have been underrepresented in this population because they had been counseled against pregnancy. So that represents, I guess, a bias of sorts. I thought it was an important study. We don't talk enough about the lens of pregnancy as a risk factor both for immediate and long-term cardiac issues. This paper, I think, is a landmark article that will affect how people assess women's risk for peri-delivery cardiac complications and then afterward. So I thought both studies together, one on congenital heart disease, the other looking at cardiac complications in pregnancy, represented in some ways landmark articles for us. And I thought they would be useful to our learning audience. I want to thank you for listening to Eagle's Eye View. This is your cardiovascular update done weekly from the ACC.org. And this information can be found on the American College of Cardiology's website. Find us online or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you.